welcome to The Thriller Zone. I'm your host, David Temple, and I'm so glad you have joined us. Because today I have a particularly special event planned. There's a book out by Blackstone Publishing called Hotel California. And it is a compilation of short stories written by some of the greatest writers living today. Let me tell you who is included. Heather Graham, Andrew Child, John Gilstrap, Reed Farrell Coleman, Don Bruns, Amanda Flower, Jennifer Dornbush, and Rick Blywis. These are some hellaciously talented folks. This particular show is chock full of not only some of the great stories, backstories from these authors, but when you find out how they put their spin on a short story that involves titles from Hotel California, the album by the Eagles, only one of the most popular albums of all time, you're going to get a kick out of it. But boy, wait till you hear the insights. You know how one of my favorite things is to ask the author's advice at the end of every show? Well, each one of them come to the table with something particularly great. You will want to stay riveted to your seat right to the very end. So, without any further ado, the Zoom room is packed full of people for Hotel California. Oh boy, it's going to be a full house. Wow, look at all these beautiful faces.
Well, Oops. You're clearly not seeing me.
All right, who have we got? Hey, Johnny, how are you, buddy?
I am well, thanks. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you. Rick?
Hey, David.
Reed, nice to meet you for the first time. Heather, I met you at Thriller Fest 2019. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
I did see you this past year, but you were so inundated with so many people searching for your attention.
It was a different... nice Thriller Fest, but different one.
Yeah, it was. Hey, Amanda.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you. Who are we waiting on? Let's see. Andrew, is he coming? Do you know?
No, I know Don Bruns is coming for sure.
Yes.
Well, that's a shame.
Well, I mean, if he's got to. not like he had anything to do with this. I mean. Jennifer?
Hello.
Hello? Are you? You must be out in wine country.
I'm in the vineyard today. I feel like I should have a glass of wine.
Yeah, please do.
Is it too early?
Oh. No, this is vodka. Are you kidding me? How you doing?
Right.
Don, good morning or afternoon,
good
wherever
morning.
You are. Yes.
Your day is just starting.
Yeah. Actually, my day started at 4:30 so I could get in the very last of this gorgeous little book.
Great.
You know, when you're reading this many books, you gotta squeeze it in wherever you can. And I happen to be just an early riser from the old radio day. So,
wow, 4:30 is early.
Speaking of radio, you played records. Did you see the hardcover?
Listen, you're stealing my thunder, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, we're not on yet. So.
Stealing my proverbial thunder. Matter of fact, I'm going to tell you a quick story. By the way, welcome to the Thriller Zone. Let's just get rolling, huh? How about it?
Yep.
Thank you.
Cool.
Rick knows me from a little ways back, and I hate to admit this, except I like to admit it. I know one thing about Blackstone. They don't cut any corners anywhere. So I'm doing a little photo shoot in my audio booth here behind me one day to start talking about this, and I'm like, and I'm just, you know, photographing it like it is, and I'm like, wait a minute. If this is Blackstone, I bet you, and I did this, and I went, holy shit, look at that. Yet I almost wanted to lay it down and put my stylus on it to see if I could get any music out of it.
I tried it. It doesn't work.
God dang it. It's gorgeous. Yeah. God, not to steal your stealing my thunder, but I thought, you know, why not share that? All right. Well, we only have an hour and I got eight stories, and I thought I'd do this. I'm going to make a little attempt at order. If any of you guys ever watch this show, you know, I do a little free form. John and Rick have been on the show, so they know. I can't wait to get each of the others of you on your show, on the show solo, you know.
Awesome.
And Jennifer, I'm expecting you to show up with a glass of wine. All right. Let's do this. For those who, and I know we're, Rick, how far are we into the launch?
It came out on July 12th, if I'm not mistaken.
So it's okay. Better. So how about this? Don, since this is kind of your puppy, you're leading the crew on this. How about, for those not familiar, Don, you just give us a nice little tee up. It's a great story and nobody better to tell it than you.
I got asked about 2 years ago to do a short story for a Jimmy Buffett book. Similar, they wanted one song from every Buffett album, and I got saddled with Cheeseburger in Paradise, which I had a ball with. You know, we can't write about the song, but we use the title. And when I called Julie Gwynn, who's my agent, two of the other people here, Julie said, "I wish we'd thought of that." And I said, "You know, they can't copyright the idea." So we said, "Let's do Hotel California," which is one of the top three albums of all times. And Julie said, "Who are you going to get to do this?" And I said, "Well, give me a week and I'll round up some authors." Well, the point is that Hotel California is kind of cool because the authors that I meet are usually in hotel bars. That's where you meet them at conferences and you get to know them, and you only see them two or three times a year, but you catch up and you become good friends. So I called my bar friends, Heather Graham.
Thank you.
Heather's been known to toast, you know, and we got Andrew Child because I knew Brother Lee. And it was on and Reed Coleman. And it just became a snowball thing. Nobody said no. And so I called Julie 5 days later and I said, "Here's the authors." And she said, "Oh my God." She said, "I've got a couple that can fill in where, you know, we still have the blanks." And so she did. And in a nutshell, it came together beautifully. And we were dealing with truly professional writers who hit the mark as far as the stories, as far as the deadlines. I was worried about being the employer and having to pull eight people together and make this happen, and they made it so easy. And Rick and Blackstone were so good. Julie had it sold within a week to Blackstone, and they've agreed to do two more.
Oh, nice. Golf clap. Beautiful. Now, let me see. By the way, welcome, Andrew Child. Good to see you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's see. I heard rumors. Where did I hear this? Probably on Rick's social media. What the next two books are. Are you talking about it yet? We're going to be spend plenty of time on Hotel California, so don't worry about that.
We've already turned in the stories for Thriller for next year.
Oh,
and we have three. Well, we've got all the authors lined up for AC/DC Back in Black. Andrew is excited. He's seen AC/DC seven times in his life. And he was the first one I called and he said, "I'll do it if I can do You Shook Me All Night Long." And I said, "You got it, pal." So.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know if you believe it, but there was a time when I actually had some hair, and you know, so yeah, seeing AC/DC numerous times, yeah, that was fantastic. So when Don suggested it, I absolutely couldn't say no.
Yeah. No doubt. Now, it's funny, Don, because Thriller, Michael Jackson, Thriller Zone, I didn't get an invite. I'm, maybe it's in the mail somewhere. I just.
The next one. You'll All be right, fair enough. To write for.
All right. I'm going to kind of move around the room so that I don't, exclude anyone, but Don and or anyone else can answer this. I do want to know, just as a curiosity, were there rules or guidelines for each person when it came time to craft their stories outside of the fact that pick a favorite title of the album?
Well, I'll take this.
Okay.
One of the things that I loved about Don's rules were there didn't seem to be any rules. I've done several of these. I did a Lou Reed tribute book and I wrote a story for that. And I was asked for a Billy Joel story. And I said, "Is it okay to hate Billy Joel and do the story?" And they said, "Well, you're out. So, there, and on, I live on Long Island and hating Billy Joel People throw stones at my house. So, one of the things I loved about Don was he gave, at least as far as I know, he sort of said, here's the word limit, go. And that to a bunch of writers like us, it's magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a great tee up for me, because I want to know how someone would compare and enjoy writing shorts versus long form. So let's go with Heather. 'Cause Heather, I know you just got a ginormous body of work. Do you have a preference?
I had so many children. I had to keep working. Very expensive. I love short stories. I mean, I love what I do to begin with, but something like this takes you out of the zone that you're usually in. And like Reed was saying, if there were rules on this one, they went into my spam. So we could kind of do whatever we wanted. And when Don came to me with Hotel California, I'm an old theater major, and we do theater shows at a lot of the conferences. And all I could think of is, I know a lot of you all know F. Paul Wilson, is he sang Hotel California for one of our shows. And the minute you said it, I was in love with the concept. And all I could think of was Paul. So it was the whole idea was, for me, just completely fun. And again, I do love it, because not that I don't love what I do, but it takes you out of that for a little bit. It refreshes your thinking. And it kind of, the title gives you something that you're working with. But then again, there are no rules. So it's a challenge and it's fun.
Heather did Pretty Maids All in a Row, and she took a New Orleans cemetery as the scene, and it's wonderful. And I, these women, all dolls that are human beings, and Pretty Maids All in a Row is perfect for her.
Amanda, I want to ask you the same question. How did you find that experience in short versus long?
Yeah, when I was first asked, I was just surprised, because I'm known for cozies, and I seem like an odd fit, but I was happy to do it. I'm definitely more comfortable writing long, because I've written so many novels, and that, so it was nice to really challenge myself for something and write something quick and with a punch, instead of, you know, a long story. And I write series, so like some things go on for 5-6 years for a character. So like I just had to get in and out, and I really enjoyed it. And I think it kind of revitalized my novel writing too, because it made me think about, you know, getting to the point a little bit quicker.
Jennifer, you're nodding. You have a similar experience, perhaps?
Yeah, this was because I started writing screenplays before I did novels. And that's a very truncated form of writing. And then this falls somewhere in the middle. So I loved it. I loved the process. It was fun to for me, having switched to novels, like, wow, these take a long time to write, man. I love it now. So doing a short story, it was like, yeah, kind of like what Amanda saying, it was kind of a quick in and out, a really good writing exercise, and an amazing first foray with all these incredible writers to be a part of.
Yeah. You know, one of the great things about having my front row seat to all the thriller writers in the world is that I'm discovering a lot of guys, especially in the South, which is where I'm from, doing these novella breakouts, and there's a good many short compilations as well. And so I'm wondering, and this is an open question, do you think there's an ideal length of a particular book? And I'm talking about, besides the obvious answer of however long it takes to tell a good story. Anybody?
Well, I think that's the answer. The cliche is the answer, right? The depends on the number of plot lines and such. What I enjoyed about participating in Hotel California is, yes, it's a short story, but it's a long form short story. It was 7,000-8,000 words. I forget, which in my experience in writing in this genre, in short stories, they tend to be a lot shorter than that. And I enjoyed sort of taking a novelistic approach to Wasted Time, which is the story I had. But I think whether it's a novella or a novel, or it depends on how big a story do you want to tell. And with a short story, as with a novella, to me, is a longer short story. It's much more focused when it's a shorter length. And I think readers like that. It's it's just a different reading experience.
Anyone else?
I have a great pornographic answer for that.
Why does that not surprise me? And it is?
It's the anticipation part of it, yeah.
David, we talked before about this, but, you know, and you know as well as anyone that the novel, the middle part, the sag, you know, is so hard to overcome and get to point B and point A and point B. And the short, you start off big and you finish big, and there's no real middle, which is kind of nice. I think that does give us an opportunity to look at storytelling in a different way. We don't have to support a lot of the stuff in the middle. We can limited characters, bang and bang, and that's the way it goes.
Bang and bang. Hey, Andrew, I got a question for you. Especially you and your brother are well known for these pretty hefty size books. What was your favorite part of this more truncated storytelling?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, I love listening to everyone else's answers because, you know, they always say if you've got 10 novelists in a room, you're going to get 11 answers to a question. And, you know, I'm hearing everybody, you know, it's great to hear that because I actually find writing short stories really difficult. I actually find it harder than writing a novel. And to me, it's kind of like imagining a chef, who instead of getting to have a sort of 14-course tasting banquet, they have to get all of that same complexity, all of that same subtlety, but have it all crammed into one appetizer. And so I find it really difficult. It's one of those contradictions. When I'm writing a novel, I'm always worried about, is it going to be long enough? So I was desperately trying to think of a good answer to your previous question, you know, how long should it be? All I really know when I'm writing a novel is I'm worried that it's not going to be long enough. So doing the short story, it was the opposite way around. It was really hard to make it short enough. So, I like it for really the same things that other people were saying. It's an escape from what you're doing all the time, which enables you to do things differently. It enables you to try things out that you wouldn't necessarily do otherwise. And it frees you from some of those shackles. And it means that you kind of challenge yourself in a different way. And I always feel that you do your best writing when you're challenged, when you've painted yourself into that corner. You know, there's always that sort of temptation to cheat. You know, when you're writing a novel and you can make it as long as you want, you've got that temptation. You can go back, you can cheat, you can hide the knife under the cushion, you know, for somebody to find later. But if you don't take the easy way out, if you force yourself to work your way out of that corner you've painted your way into, that's when you do your best stuff. And it seemed to me like that was applying to writing the short story, because the very fact that it was difficult made you work on it that much harder and hopefully made the result that much better. So I did, despite myself, really enjoy doing it, but it was not easy work. It was difficult work.
I had exactly opposite experience, because the majority of my writing before I started writing novels was writing newspaper and magazine articles and columns. And almost by definition, they're kind of short stories because they're limited space and you have to tell the story from beginning to end. I wrote songs, a lot of them were story songs, same thing. You got to pack a story into a short song. So it's harder for me to write a novel than a short story, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. It's funny, just to put it into my plate for a second, I was writing a commercial yesterday for a new new sponsor of the show. We talked about the spot needs to be between 60 and 90 seconds. And I crafted this whole great story and I looked at the time on it. I'm like, well, Jesus, that's 2.5 minutes. And all of a sudden I'm trimming it down. Like, how can I get the real essence of the story? And that's one of the great things about short form, is that you really decide, is that word really necessary? You kind of said it here, and what if I took this out, and what if I just truncated this whole idea and theme? And I know this is much different than the exercise that you guys have gone through, but it is a great reminder of how sometimes we lean back into that, oh, I've got like 95 to 100,000 words, I can just do whatever I want.
The other thing is, David, that the writing advertising copy, which I did for 35 years, and you just said you're doing, is a great training for fiction writing. So.
Yeah.
Well, You know, it's been said that all writing is rewriting, so that, in fact, short stories are a good exercise for novel writing, because it teaches you how to be lean. Also, short story writing, I always feel I'm a better writer after every short story I've written. And what I loved about this was I had the opportunity to work in a genre that I don't usually work in. I don't usually do science fiction or fantasy or horror, and I got the opportunity to do that. How well I did it, apparently, it's arguable, but at least I got to try it.
Also, I think for those of us who write long-running series, there's a voice to the Grave novels that I've been writing. And it's not repetitive. The stories still have to be developed, but you tell a story a certain way because it's how the story comes out. I find that in writing short stories, I can use an entirely different voice. I can write, in this case, in the first person instead of the third person. You can get a little creepier. You can just kind of exercise different storytelling skills in a short than in a novel. That's what I find exciting about it too.
John, I'm curious. The last time we talked, you were moving into a new home that you were building. Is this the new home? I'm just curious.
This is it. This is my office.
Sweet. Nice. Congratulations. I've got a loaded question, but I'm kind of good for that. And I'm assuming that everyone has read the entire book and everyone else's stories. Who's going to be the first person to step up and tell me their favorite story that may be their own?
Oh, my favorite story.
Anyone but Brunses.
Thank you.
It's like a box of chocolates, like, you know, Forrest Gump. Everyone tastes different. They're all so delicious. Yeah.
And there wasn't one of those stinking awful cherry things in it anywhere.
Right. Or coconut.
Yeah, the one that always gets left to the end that no one wants. Yeah.
That you always pawned off to your brother or sister. No, really, you take it. I've already had enough.
They were all dark chocolate caramel.
Yeah. Oh, with some delicious nuts thrown into it.
Yeah.
A little salt on top.
This is funny. I'm actually at Hard Rock right now, and they have objects that belong to the Eagles. And I was thinking, I should really go and stand by something that had belonged to the Eagles. But then the slot machines are so loud.
Hey, Rick, this may be a slightly tangential question, but I was preparing for the show. I wanted so badly, especially having been in radio for 25 years, I so want to drop the needle on Hotel California. And you can't do that these days without all kinds of permission. So I wanted to open the show with the theme song, but you can't do that, can you, Rick, at all?
Actually, you might be able to do anything you want. As the publisher, I can't, but you as a videocaster, you could probably do whatever you want. I'm not sure.
Okay, thanks. That was really helpful. All right, listen, here's a question. Given each of you have had pretty handsome, illustrious careers, what's something, and this is slightly off the beaten path, which is where I like to spend most of my life, what's something that you haven't done yet that you look forward to doing?
Winning the
I would like to try acting, actually.
You've been up for the Edgar Award several times.
Yes, I've lost it 4 times. So yes, I'd like to try winning it once.
Yeah. All right, so we got winning an
Bill
Edgar.
Bill Strapp would be a good actor. I have been around him, and he most of his life he's acting. You know, it's hard to pin down the real John Gilstrap.
Bruns wants to be a musician. He's never tried that.
Thank you. You're just zinging away.
Wow. So all those Instagram photos and Twitter photos with him and his guitar out on the beach, that's just play acting, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm like Gilstrap. I'm acting. No, I made a living as a musician for, you know, I would like to do a TV show.
Yeah.
I'd like to do a TV series. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As you mean more like a streaming drama, or do you mean more like a variety show?
No, I would do. I have a couple ideas that would be a streaming. You know,
okay,
a la Blue Bloods, possibly something on that.
Nice. Amanda, how about you?
I think I want to be able to say someday that I have 100 books published. So I'm working my way towards that. I'm at 43, so.
Wow. That's pretty good.
How cheesy would this be? Who's got the most?
Oh, Heather.
Yeah. Heather's got 843 at last count.
I honestly don't know. I know that my husband exaggerates anytime he tells anybody. But it is between novellas and books. It's close to 200. But I got really lucky. I did get to act, and I acted. I love dinner theater. I still do. That's why we do it. But the children were way too expensive for what I could make in Florida. Florida was a non-equity state. At the time, I really couldn't afford to work. And that's, I'm very, very grateful. That's how I wound up writing. But I was also very young. So I've had, not to say I'm, you know, yeah, well, I'm pretty old. So I've had a lot of time, and given enough time, you're probably going to get right where you want to be.
Yeah. Oh, nicely put. Andrew, if you weren't writing books, what would you be doing?
Well, you know what I'd love to do? I love making things. I love making physical things, you know, and that's something that's so different to what we do when we're writing, because it's just you and the screen. And, you know, the most you can hope for is that you have a few extra words by the end of the day. Some days it goes the other way and you have fewer words, which is a disaster. So I love making things. I mean, honestly, I'm one of the very few weird people that actually enjoys putting together IKEA flat pack furniture, things like that. I just love making things. So if I could, I would like to be a sculptor, and I would like to make things out of metal, preferably, you know, those kind of things where you buy a whole bunch of old junk, you know, pieces of engine parts, you know, scrap metal, and you find a way of fixing them together so that they look like something recognizable. That would be me. I'd be locked away in some old garage somewhere with a oxyacetylene torch, and hopefully not, you know, set either myself or the building on fire, and you know, wind up making cool looking sculptures.
That's awesome.
Andrew, if you could actually put IKEA together, we're all going to have to move to Montana. As possible.
I absolutely love it. It's like therapy for me.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you keep the extra screws because you know the next one you order is going to have too few?
Yeah. Plus, you know, I'm one of those, I'm horrible because, you know, I'll look at the screws they provide and I'll think, nah, these are too weedy. I'm going to use, you know, I have a big stash of my own hardware that I always bring in. So, you know, no, it's just peculiar. It's like a 3D jigsaw puzzle. I love putting it together. Yeah.
One of the things I love, I'm with you, Andrew. One of the things I love about fixing anything or painting, which I just do, is that there's no judgment for me. Like when you're doing a podcast, you know, you have to perform. You got to make sure you did your homework and read the material and ask good questions, and you look good and the equipment works. And then if you're writing a book, all the words have to come together. But when you're, I mean, sometimes I get the biggest pleasure out of mowing the friggin' lawn just because I'm like, I just do this and I do that. There's no judgment.
Yeah, anything where you can see a difference at the end of it, I like.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's interrupt for a second, but yeah, Reed has not spoken. And Reed told me not too long ago that he had dreams of delivering home heating oil in a truck. Well,
that's actually, I drove a truck for 7 years. So let me
disabuse you. Can always go back to that. If
you have a fantasy about driving a truck, let me disabuse you of this fantasy. Yes.
You mean it's not as romantic as we all think it is?
Well, you know, it's hysterical. As people used to say, do women, when you come to the door, do women ever, you know, throw themselves at you? I said, what are you, nuts? I smell like petroleum products. I'm filthy. And nobody throws themselves at me.
Yeah, that was the problem, Reed. It was the petroleum, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, it wasn't the ball of being old. It had nothing to do with that.
All right, let's dig a little bit deeper into Hotel California. Since there are 8 stories, and again, we only have now a half hour, let's see if we can share a synopsis or a log line or a theme of each chapter. And let's say, for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to do go with the table of contents and just go in that order, so everybody kind of knows where they are. And so that starts with Andrew. So New Kid in Town, great song, is our start. If you want to just give me, Andrew, without spoiling it, of course, if you just kind of do your little synopsis of it, that'd be great.
I would love to. Thank you. But before I do that, one little creepy sort of factoid, if you don't mind. We did, Blackstone was amazing, and they came up, one of the things they came up with was an edition where all of us signed a page to be inserted in the final book, you know, signed for our story. So I sat down to sign mine, and you know, I like to listen to music when I'm doing stuff like that. So I pull out my iPhone, and it's got about 5,500 songs on it. So I hit random, set it down, pulled out the pen. And the first song out of the 5,500 that came on was New Kid in Town, which freaked me out. I was going to say that in a different way, but I don't know if this is a family show or not. But it certainly freaked me out. But my story, and this is, you know, Don, this was Don's suggestion. He suggested that I do this one because it was great for me, because it was right when we were doing the transition with my brother and me coming on board to work with him on Reacher. So I kind of was the new kid in that respect. And I love the idea of the dynamic that changes when a new person arrives somewhere. So I imagined a very sleepy little town in sort of way down in Texas, where nobody really goes unless you've got no way of getting out, or you've got no, you want to be somewhere where no one's going to find you and no one's going to see what you're doing. So I imagine somebody being there so that they could get up to all kinds of nefarious things without anybody being too nosy or too suspicious. But then a stranger arrives in town right when this person's getting in trouble, and this guy thinks that he could perhaps just blame all of his bad luck on this new arrival. Only it turns out that the new arrival is Jack Reacher. So his plans don't quite work the way he expected.
It was such a strong story, and it just screamed Jack. So I loved it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Don, let's see. This began with you. So why don't we talk about Life in the Fast Lane?
Yeah. I mean, it just wrote itself. I mean, it's a dirt track driver in a little town in Georgia. The only entertainment in the town is the dirt track. And this guy's the hero. And it turns out that he's a bad guy, and this hitman is sent to rub him out, and he finds out this guy isn't as bad as everybody thought he was, and he's got to make a decision whether to honor the contract and kill this guy or find another way. So, but it was fun because I, like Andrew, you know, you find a town, you find a place, you make up in your head. Most of my books, 18 novels, have been set in a Caribbean island or some place that's recognizable. And if you read it, you say, oh, yeah, I've been there. I know that. This is a town I totally made up. And it was fun. It was dusty. It was dirty. It was a Friday night racetrack where, you know, these wannabe heroes and cowboys are driving around. And it was just a lot of fun to be there.
Having been in NASCAR world, I felt very close to it. Hey, John. How about Wasted Time?
My whole writing life has been involved with writing political thrillers or thrillers that deal with politics. And in Wasted Time, we've got Tony Bain, who is the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, who he's a power wielder, and he's very proud of the power he wields. And he receives a surprise visit from his ne'er-do-well brother, who's been released from prison way too early. And he shares an old family secret. Back when Tony was a young man in private school, they did something really bad together. And the secret, it's a buried body, is about to be uncovered. And unless they recover the body, then it's all over for Tony Bain. And so you've got the career criminal getting together with the career politician, and they uncover the secret. They go to uncover the secret. This is weird. This story is actually based on a recurring nightmare where I have, it's actually with my mother. I mean, there's no paging Dr. Freud, where my mother and I, she long deceased, my mother and I have to dig up the basement in the house where I grew up because we together buried a body there. and that it's, this is not a confession. It's just a nightmare. But it was, I thought, wow, that it, then it, and the story occurred to me and I wrote it. It was a lot of fun to do. And I have not had the nightmare since.
So many lines there. I'm just going to leave them all alone. Reed, victim of love.
Well, I thought John was going to do wasted time was going to be about my career, but he obviously went in the Freudian direction. Well, victim of love is so suggestive and it's so obvious the ways you could take it that, of course, being the obstinate prick that I am, I took it in a very different direction. I thought about a character who was much like the mass shooters that we've been dealt with, you know, the guy, the lonely white guy who's felt very put upon that somehow women, you know, reject and feels that he's owed a debt by the world. So I took that concept and the idea of, you know, I purposely avoided in my novels writing about the pandemic. So I thought, you know what, let me write a little bit about the pandemic in a way that most people wouldn't think about the pandemic. So let's just say something we all did during the pandemic that became second nature to us had a very different outcome with this particular character.
Was it eating too much or drinking too much? Was everyone else in that? Very nicely done. Heather. Pretty Maids All in a Row.
I would say it was about the same as soon as I knew the title. I love New Orleans, and I think it has the most atmospheric cemeteries to be found anywhere, cities of the dead. And I think as soon as I had talked to Don, I just pictured all these bodies laid out in a New Orleans cemetery. And then, of course, you have to find out where they are. And, of course, it leads for some, you know, humor, too, because... oh my God, I found bodies. Well, of course you did. It's a cemetery. You know, yeah. It's like, no. You know, bodies that aren't supposed to be there. And then I think the, just the concept, I think I'm like a lot of us here, and I watch a lot of the CSI, the FBI, the Criminal Minds, and I watch all the documentaries too. And this is a little bit based on one of the documentaries I saw. And then again, like I said, I just love New Orleans. There's nowhere in New Orleans where you can't feel a little bit of a spooky atmosphere kind of sensation. So it was like, again, you know, like as soon as Don said it, I knew my basic concept of what I was doing and loved getting to do it.
Isn't that amazing how an idea will come so quickly on some things and then it could take forever on another? So that's really an awesome talent to be able to tap into that, Heather.
Well, no, but well, I mean, you can also get the idea and then it's like, wow, what a great idea. What the hell am I going to do? You know, that can happen too. So
Sure. Amanda, Try and Love Again.
Yeah. So I think like most of the people here, I started with the setting. I knew that I wasn't going to write a cozy. So I was like, well, I will write a private eye. And I'm from Ohio. So I was just kind of thinking, where to put it. So I put it on Put-in Bay, which is an island in the middle of Lake Erie, and it has a reputation of as a party island. So I could see a private eye that we really don't know much about her, and we don't really end up learning much about her personally, which I kind of liked, because for my cozies, you know everything about a cozy protagonist, from her dog or cat or to her grandma and all that kind of stuff. So it was nice to be a little bit vague. So I chose to put her there because I could just see a private eye just making enough money, getting by, dealing with petty crimes on Put-in Bay, because it is such a I've been there a few times, and it's a very weird juxtaposition because there's the Perry National Monument to the War of 1812. So there's a national park there. And then there's all these bars where people celebrate St. Patrick's Day every weekend of the summer. So the crime itself, she's just solving, you know, a small petty case when she kind of gets pulled into this 20-year-old murder that happened on the island that she's kind of poked into before. And it's makes her curious, and she starts poking into it, only to learn that it has a really surprising twist for her at the end.
Dun, 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 dun. And Rick, tell us about The Last Resort.
Well, to start with, I've been writing stories about characters that lived 110 years ago, so I decided to try something contemporary. And right before the pandemic started, I spent some time in Maui, in Kihei, and I just said, and I happened to stay at a resort that was the last resort at the end of the road there. So I figured that was a great way to tie into the story, The Last Resort. So my story's about a hitman in New York, Walker, premier hitman, and he goes on a hit, and he ends up being the target, and he escapes to Maui, and it becomes a cat and mouse game between him and the hit person sent to finish him off.
Yeah. And what kind of response have you gotten from that ending?
Really, it's interesting because a few of the reviews that we've had on the book have said, I generally don't like endings like this, but I liked this one. So that pleased me, you know. Yeah. I was pleased that, and I just thought that that's how I saw it end in my mind.
Awesome. Loved it. And Jennifer,
you know, David, I haven't seen the movie because I think it comes out the 6th, but Bullet Train is along the same line. It's about 5 assassins on a train that are all supposed to kill each other. Brad Pitt's movie. It's coming out the 6th.
Oh yeah. Good. I saw that trailer. It's kind
it's based
of
based on a Japanese novel.
Okay.
So,
and it's comedic.
I thought it was based on Rick's story, but it's not. So.
You never know.
Yeah. And Jennifer got the title of the book, and I love this. You so unique. Take it away, Jen.
Yeah, it's not like anything I'd ever written before, because I typically do write like the whodunit or the howdunit, but I immediately just, you know, heard the first, the song is so haunting to begin with, and, you know, on a dark desert highway, and I immediately saw this young woman, rising social media star. She's flying down the high, you know, California coast, Highway 1, on her way to just take fame by the horns. She's, you know, going to be the star of this new TV show. She's kind of got life. She's fleeing, honestly, because she has had kind of a pedestrian sort of life in Northern California, and she ends up checking into this quirky, she kind of runs out of steam and has to pull into this glamorous Chateau Cambria that is not anything like, which is the Hotel California, it's not anything like she thought it would be inside. And she ends up meeting these kind of languishing spirits of dead Hollywood, like celebrities and actresses, and they're all sort of on their long delayed passage between heaven and hell. And in the process, she's kind of, she's wants to be where they were, and she gets different pieces of advice and sees weird things and gets a little freaked out, tries to escape, has to get some help from a priest who lives up the hill, who kind of has his own celebrity past. And I won't tell you about the ending, but it's sort of, pursuing your dreams and, you know, where does it all lead in the end, which I think is what the song is about, you know?
Sure. Man, every time you, from that very first note, you are instantly, isn't it true? Instantly taken back to where you were when you first heard that song. It's one of those few songs I feel personally that just instantly transport you back to that era. And it's one of those songs. Has anyone ever gotten tired of it ever? No.
I'm very tired of it.
Yeah, but you don't like Billy Joel either. So, you know.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
All right. Here's something I want to do. And I do this on the podcast for those who have not heard the Thriller Zone yet. I always close with a question with my author friends. And I love to get their best piece of writing advice. because so many of the listeners to the podcast are up and coming writers. A lot of them seasoned, but a lot of them up and coming. And I always love to end with that because I've gotten the best feedback from my listeners and viewers who have come back and said, man, I love that point because they give me an insight that maybe I haven't thought of before. So I want to start with Rick, and I've got my own little circuitous way of doing it, but I want to start with Rick, and Rick's been on the show before, and I do remember some great insights, but as of today, if you were to offer our listeners, what is your best piece of writing advice?
I don't know if it's the best, but it's the one that comes to mind, and that is, if you're going to be a writer, write. Keep writing and, you know, and don't get discouraged by any rejection. Just write, write, and keep writing.
Fair enough. Heather, you're next.
I'm going to agree with what Rick says is if you want to do it, do it. And then for me personally, I like to get things down. And of course, somebody is not going to buy you because you put your comma in the right place every time. They're going to buy your book for a great story. Which doesn't mean you shouldn't remember that after you've gotten all the excitement of your story down that you should go through and try to make sure that you're putting your best foot forward. And I think one of the things that kind of depresses me, I guess, when I hear it is sometimes people say, oh, well, I'm so busy writing, I don't read anymore. It's like the one thing in common of all the people that I know, no matter if they were in music, if they were attorneys, doctors, whatever, everybody got into this because they loved books, because they loved reading. And I think sometimes if you say I'm too busy to read, you're going to forget why you're doing what you're doing. And a lot of a great story is the passion that you get on your passion about and make sure you're doing your absolute best step forward.
I got most of that. Everyone else, you cut out a little bit at the end, but I do like that.
I'm sorry.
No worries. It's what happens when you get 400 people on a Zoom call. Andrew, let's go to you next. And I want to insert an extra little thought because as I was thinking about you, I've been such a big fan of your brother for so long. And I want a two-part question. One is, what is your best piece of advice? And I would love to know, if it's cool, what kind of advice Lee handed to you as he said, hey, take this mantle and go with it, what his insights were.
Well, thank you. Yeah, my advice is actually to ignore all advice, because I think that there's a big danger. You know, if I think back to when I was starting out, you know, I think a lot of people have this vision that there's a certain way that you do it. You know, most people have had jobs where you've had training and you've had people, you know, show you what to do or tell you what to do or give you a manual or something. There is no manual. There is no way of, you know. So if you set out thinking that there's this certain thing you've got to do, you've got to use a particular kind of word processing program, or you've got to start at a particular time of day or write a particular number of words or whatever, that is a disaster. What you have to do, what you've got to remember, is that you are the best person in the world at telling your story. In fact, you're the only person who can tell your story. So do not listen to anyone else. You know, I've had several friends who have been trying to get books published and they've been nervous and they've gone to other people that they know and asked for their opinions, and they've got half a dozen different opinions which they've then weaved into the book. And then instead of having a distinctive story with their own voice, which captivates you and makes you want to keep going, you just end up with this mishmash of different competing, conflicting things, and it winds up being nothing. So ignore everybody else, write your own story. You're the only person that can do that. And in fact, there's a way that that links exactly into what Heather was saying in terms of, is there a training course for this? Well, actually, the way that you learn to be a writer is that you read. And if you're too busy to read, then you're too busy to write. So you've got to keep going with the writing. That is, with the reading, that is the most important thing of all. And then just tell your story the way that you want to tell it. Because what I've found over the years talking to people is that a lot of people find the sort of second and third books and so on much more difficult, because at that point they're kind of burdened down with this expectation that they are now an author. So they've discovered that there are rules about, oh, you can't have backstory in the first chapter, or you can't have this, or you can't have that, or you can't start a chapter with dialogue, all of these things that you don't know about when you're first starting. Especially, it's easier for us because we start started before there was so much online stuff. So, you know, you just kind of pulled out a piece of paper or a laptop and you got going. You didn't Google to find out how you did it and discover there were like 8 million rules. And by the time you try to find a path that avoids all of these, do not do this, do not do that, you know, you're left with about 3 words you can use. And, you know, it's a disaster. So just ignore all of that stuff, write the story you want to write and have faith, because that's generally the only thing that keeps us going, you know. For there was that thing that it takes 10 years to become an overnight success, you know. I remember when it was like 11 years had gone by and then 12 years had gone by and 30, you know, I was thinking, well, when does the overnight success arrive, you know? And the thing is, it might not. So you've just got to forget about that. Tell your story, have faith. I used to have a sign over my desk that just said blind faith, because there is literally nothing else that keeps you going a lot of the time. So just, you know, summon up the belief from somewhere, keep reading and keep writing. Now, that's my very long-winded way of saying ignore all advice. And in terms of giving no advice, really, my brother didn't give me any, because in a way that he kind of felt that he didn't need to, because in a way it was a sort of super surprising, you know, bombshell that he dropped on me. But another way of looking at it was something that we'd actually been working up to for 25 years, because when he lost his job, you know, people think of him as the Reacher guy. But, you know, there was a point in time when I was actually the one who was doing well. You know, I had a good job in telecommunications and he was broke. He was on the dole. And he decided that, you know, the really sensible way out of this financial catastrophe was to write a book. So that's what he did. And he sent it to me to read when it was still handwritten, you know, in pencil on paper. And I have never been more nervous about reading a book than reading that book, because I'm thinking, what if it's terrible, right? First of all, I'm the one who's going to have to tell my brother, sorry, your book's terrible. And secondly, what's he going to do for money? I'm going to have to send him food parcels, or, you know, let him live in my spare bedroom or something. But so it was the biggest relief in the world when the book was great. And since then, you know, for a quarter of a century, whenever we hung out together, it was like Reacher was this extra kind of imaginary brother. You know, we would joke, we would say, well, you know, something would happen, you'd see some guy doing something stupid in a bar or something, you know, it would be like, oh, well, what would Reacher do about that? You know, what would Reacher think about this? So, you know, Reacher was a kind of projection of our kind of, you know, subconscious fantasy, you know, call it what you will. So it was Reacher's a kind of shared understanding between us, you know, that was absolutely in place. And that was rock solid. The bit that was different for me was was making it sound the same as him, because I'd written all those other books desperately trying not to sound like him. So, you know, suddenly having to turn on a dime and stop sounding one way and start sounding another way, that was the difficult part. It was the projection of it that was difficult rather than the kind of underlying part. So now he just said, do you want to do it? Okay, off you go. Oh,
excellent. I love that. Amanda, you are next.
Well, it's a little hard to follow that when he says no advice, but
it was good.
I have to credit a writer friend of mine, Heather Weber. She writes magical realism now, but she used to be in mystery. And when I was like a baby author, like going to my first conference with my first book and all shaky, she befriended me and told me, always be writing something new, because you do not know what the publishing industry will do. They merge, the lines are canceled, your series could be canceled out of nowhere, editors move around. So just be ready to like pivot at any time. And I've really taken that to heart. And I always have like a stack of proposals ready to send to my agent in case, you know, it looks like something is rumbling or something like that.
Awesome. John Circle gets a square. How about you?
I think people need to remember that writing is a craft. There is some talent involved, but ultimately the telling of a story is a craft. And like all crafts, early efforts are not going to be, you know, the first house that a builder builds is not going to be as strong and good as the 50th house that a builder built. Writers need to hone their craft. They need to read a lot. They need to write a lot. And then kind of to Andrew's point, then remember that you're writing for yourself. It's your story. It's your name that's going on it. As you get input from others, don't assume that they know more about your story than you do. If you want to seek input, that's great. And you process the input. You don't necessarily listen to the input, especially at the beginning levels where people workshop their stuff with people who don't know any more about this business than they do. I think the people who have not yet discovered their voice and don't really know what they want to say, they only hear the bad stuff, or they cling desperately to the good stuff that they hear, which is no more valid than the bad stuff that they hear. So I think the focus of anything in the entertainment business, and that's what we do, I think it's all about the writer knowing what he or she wants to say and say it the way they want to say it, all the time honing the craft and getting better, and realize that, you know, rejection is part of this. It's going to take a while, in all likelihood, before you get it right, and then before you find an audience.
Yeah, excellent, superb, Reed. I can hardly wait to hear what you got to say.
First, be fearless. The easier said than done, but you have to. You know, we've all done this, and it's insane. And I've known Lee for a long time, and the fact that he thought writing a book was the way to get out of poverty.
Yeah, no doubt.
The most insane idea you've ever heard.
Yeah.
Secondly, there's no such thing as wasted writing, which, you know, piggybacks on what Heather and John have said. I went for my students at Hofstra when I taught there, I added up all the words I had written, and it was something like 5 million. And I, you know, I told them, now some of that is our grocery lists, but every word you write makes you a better writer. So that also piggybacks onto what John said. And that the focus of your writing should be writing, not my marketing plan, not my media platform, not query letters. But the thing that you are writing must be the focus of your writing. And there are other things, the rest of the stuff you have no control over. There's one thing we all have control over, one thing, and that's the words that go on the page. And that's what you should focus on.
Superb. Damn. Jennifer, let's hear it.
Three things. Courage, craft, and curiosity. I spent at least 10 years running from my calling to be a writer. So I think it takes a great amount of courage to make that decision and stick with it. So courage just to, like, I think kind of like what Andrew was saying about just having faith and believing that you can do this and that you're meant to do it, and you have stories to give to the world that the world needs to hear. So getting to that point can take a bit. Craft, absolutely important to know your craft, and that takes a bit as well. And then just curiosity, having a curiosity about the world. And I think it's really challenging right now, because I truly believe social media, internet is the suffocation, the death smotherer of curiosity. And if you could just, you know, for a week, turn it all off and just see the world. People say, what do you do about writer's block? I'm like, what writer's block? Look around the world, you know, look up off your phone and you will look in your neighborhood. I mean, there's just having fostering a sense of curiosity, you'll never run dry.
Oh, that is so good. I just had that thought inside the last 48 hours when I was spending too much time doing this bullshit. And I'm like, man, I got to take a break. And part of it's hard because we're trying to push the machine forward. But I'm with you, Jen. That's great. And best for last, maybe, possibly, Don.
David, Thanks. Thank you for doing this. This has been great. And it's so nice that everybody shows up and we get to talk. And we're going to be at some of us are going to be at BoucherCon in Minneapolis. And I hope some of your listeners and viewers will be there as well. And I hope they come up and say something to us. John, you're going to be there. Reed, you're going to be there. Heather, you're going to be there. Who else? Okay. Well, anyway, we got half the writers will be there. You know, you are the prime example, and these people are the prime example of what I believe that a lot of writers, wannabes, forget. This is a business. You know, it's a business. You've made it a business right here, plus your books, and treat it like a business. Amanda said she has a file of pitch ideas. You know, that is a business approach. And the thing that people say, well, how did you get this? I networked. Now, I have not been able to network for 3 years, but we networked. That's how I met almost every one of these people on your show today. And not only networked, but got to know them on a personal basis. And we share ideas and we share publishing stories. And John Gilstrap and I had a writer's group that we had for, I think, 5 years that we mm-hmm. traded. We just got together and traded stories about the good and the bad. And it was a very, very small group, and it was a very intimate thing, but it was about the business of writing. And we've got to remember that. And you know who said that years and years and years ago? I was watching people get up and speak, and James Patterson, you know, love him or hate him, James Patterson got up and he says, "This is a damn business. If you don't treat it like that, it won't treat you well."
Nice.
David, add quickly something to piggy bank on that? That yes, was ma'am. One of the things I was going to mention too, is what you're saying. I love cons. I still go to all kinds of workshops, but the thing about it is you meet people, you get so much from them. And then the only thing you have to remember is you can go to all kinds of things. You can learn all kinds of things, and you'll have people say things in different ways. And my biggest suggestion on that is go to everything you want to, listen to everything you want to, but don't ever let anybody say, "This is the way you do it." Listen and take what works for you and hold on to that and let the other stuff go. But there is nothing like the, I think that's one of the things I'm most grateful for in the world, is the friends that I have all over the country and all over the world. So you get to know people, and that's one of the best things. You never know when somebody's going to say, "Amanda, they want that right now. Get it over there." A friend who happens to know what's going on somewhere else, or I mean, to any of us, the networking with each other, I think is one of the most priceless things we get from what we do.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the fact that I'm with you, Heather. I've made so many great friends over these Thriller Fest and so forth. And I love the fact that there's, you know, I came in from a world showbiz competition galore, but there's none of that here. And I just, at first I'm like, could this really be happening? But it really is. And the way we all support and lift is superb. By the way, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the Thriller Zone. You guys, this was the highlight of my week. I can honestly say that. I so appreciate it.
You've had a bad week, huh?
David, you're the best. You're the best at what you do.
David, can I say thank you to Blackstone? John. Blackstone, every one of these authors, we said this so many times, we can't believe the support they've given us. We can't believe the materials that they've given us. Blackstone has been fabulous, and we're very excited about the next two projects as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you want a big thank you to Blackstone Publishing, and to learn more, get your copy of your book, Blackstone Publishing. Oh, very nice. Oh, nice. John is holding up a t-shirt, and is that a box?
Yes,
it is.
You got a goodie box, and this is what it came in.
Oh, sweet. I didn't get one of those.
And there's going to be a Hotel California surprise at BoucherCon too.
Oh yeah.
I couldn't afford to go to BoucherCon this year because I did Thriller Fest, and that thing will gobble you up. But here's the great news. BoucherCon's right in my backyard next year, San Diego, so I'll be there front and center. I am. Yeah.
Hey, David, you know, yes. By the way, with a voice like that, you should think about radio.
Yeah. Oh.
I might do that. That and maybe audiobooks.
What a concept.
All right. I also want to say special thanks to all my guests here today. I'm going to be sharing links below on YouTube channel and on the website. So if you guys will hang out just one quick second as we hang up, before we hang up, I want to add that to also special thanks to, of course, once again, nice folks at Blackstone Publishing, where they created just a gorgeous, this is just to have it in your library is worth a price of admission, and just such quality in everything you do. But once again, each and every one of you, great advice, great insights, great stories. I flew through this and I can't say thanks enough.
Well, thank you, David. Thank it's you. Been an absolute thank pleasure.
Yeah. Thank a lot you. Of fun. Take care, guys.
See you guys.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Good night.
How much fun was that? Oh, God. You know, if someone asked me right now, which of the short stories was your favorite? That'd be like saying, which one of my children is my favorite? Which one of those pieces of chocolate are my favorite? What's my favorite craft beer? I mean, you know, it's almost impossible. They're all good. And the advice? How about the advice? All solid. Thank you so very much to these great folks who stopped by. I mean, Heather, Andrew, John, Reed, Don, Amanda, Jennifer, Rick. Some old friends, some new friends, all of which I'm really excited to get to know better. And they all told me off camera after we hung up or after we stopped recording that they would all love to be on the show. So stay tuned for all of those folks to be on future shows of the Thriller Zone. Oh, yeah. My week just got made. All right. I'm David Temple, your host, and I will see you next time for another edition of The Thriller Zone.